myth has to carry us this way. Mystical function, cosmological function, sociological function, pedagogical function. These are the functions of myth. They structure society, they structure lives. And without them, or without some fragment of a myth, the life falls to pieces. With respect to folklore and fairy tales, these are for entertainment, but for edifying entertainment. And they usually draw upon mythic motifs. I've already spoken about dreams. Jung speaks of two types of dreams, little dreams and big. I've talked about those. Very big dreams are visions. Visions open into religious experience. Now just to summarize one more point. In India, there is a distinction made between waking consciousness, dream consciousness, deep sleep. In waking consciousness, what we see are gross objects, not self-luminous. They have to be illuminated from without, change form very slowly, and subject and object are distinct from each other, an Aristotelian logic in the world of waking consciousness. In the realm of dream, sleep, vision, the objects are self-luminous. They are what the Hindus call subtle matter. And they are identical with the observer. The observer has created the dream, and yet he experiences it with surprise. The dream is telling him something about its source, which is himself. And so it carries him into death. But he and the object that he beholds are one. That same law pertains to vision. And since the deities and demons are of a visionary kind, you and your deity are one. Deeper than that is deep dreamless sleep, where the consciousness is overcovered with darkness. The goal of yoga is to go into that area awake. And you come then to a field of what's called undifferentiated consciousness, not conscious of anything, whether waking or dreaming. That is the source beyond differentiation to which consciousness ultimately can go. Well, that's about it. Answering those questions on the knowledge of dream, vision. The shaman is the one who goes into those depths, comes out of them, and points them out to you. You can govern your life by what he tells you, or you can go into the depth yourself and come out with your own realization. The artist in the modern world is the one who ought to be doing that. But most artists that I know are completely baffled about their task. They don't know what to do. I find that men of the generation just a little older than mine who really knew what they were talking about as artists were Yeats, Joyce, Mann, Picasso, and Paul Klee. Those are...
Would you amplify the symbol of the deer, stag, hart, antelope, etc.? What is the symbolism behind ravens, crows, in various cultures? Okay, and this is another. Would you please comment on the symbolism of the raven? And someone just handed me one that is about Artemis symbolizes the bear.
Well, the bear and the deer, let me start with that. The deer loses his antlers and then gets them back again. The bear sleeps during the winter and then wakes up again. The peacock loses its feathers and gets them back again. Animals that have a cycle that way become identified with the cycle of the year and tend to play roles in folk tale and myth. Particularly the myth of primitive hunting people who were very close to animals. The crow and raven are in most places associated with death, the black bird of death. They are carrion eaters, and that's natural enough. up in the Northwest Coast, Raven plays the role, Northwest Coast America, Raven plays the role of the trickster hero. And the trickster is a great, great figure, particularly in hunting culture mythologies, although he comes on into later mythologies as well. He seems to represent the undifferentiated dynamic of the energy of life, always tipping things over. He's at once a fool and a wise man, and a very playful, popular figure. Raven, in the Northwest Coast, becomes associated with the solar hero, the sun hero, which is rather surprising since he's black, but the sun is not. However, when one goes up the Northwest Coast, as I did years ago in a small boat, ravens are everywhere, and they're playful, and they're annoying, and they're fresh, and it's the kind of animal that tends to play the role of the trickster. Other animals in this part of the world, American Indian mythologies, blue jay is in that way. But the magpie in the plains, also coyote, the fox, and prairie rabbit. There's a variety of animals that play this trickster role, and the raven is in there. Now, is there anything else I have to talk about? That's about it.
What happens to the myth and our response to them when we see the moon on TV and it's just another Earth rather than up in the sky? That is, the implications for changing myths in the modern age. You mentioned patriarchal and matriarchal myth systems. How are sex roles and animus, spiritual guests differently conceived by these different myth systems? Are there different images of masculine and feminine available from the matriarchal and the patriarchal systems? Please amplify on the idea of the moon as representing masculine principles and the sources and origins of such ideas. Also, the meaning of the male moon. Please discuss the processes through which this situation is changed. Interested in significant differences in the hero, parentheses, heroine myth, or search for women contrasted with that for men. With increasing difficulty do I translate the experience of the hero for myself. What are or are there significantly differentiable points in the individual search for women? How can we redeem the serpent? Return to the matriarchal positive affirmation of curiosity and knowledge of the opposites. Please give references for Sumerian myths. Would you speak to the myth of Parzival and the wound of the Fisher King and the king's relationship to the fish as the inhabitant of the ultimate abyssal waters? I'm interested in any ideas you have about the king's connection to the 20th century.
Well, all of those, one way or another, deal with the problem of today. First, with respect to the moonwalk, this I thought of when it took place, and I still think of it this way, as the most important thing from the point of view of mythological consciousness that happened in the 20th century. Not that we didn't know that the moon was up there, and not that ever since the time of Galileo, we have not known that the laws that operate on the Earth operate also among the planets. But here it was brought right down to us. There was a wonderful moment when the young men in the first module that went around the moon, they didn't land, they went around, or on the way back, ground control asked, "Who's navigating now?" And the man answered, "Newton." Well, when I heard that, something went up in my mind. I remember Immanuel Kant's question in his Introduction to Metaphysics. How is it that we can plan here and know relationships in space and then move over there into another space and be correct? How is it that calculations made in this space will work in that space? No one had ever been up there around the moon. No one had ever been in that space before. But they knew how much energy and in what direction to send it. In order to bring that module back within a mile of a boat waiting in the Pacific Ocean, the a priori laws of space are in the human mind. They're in us. Next trip, no one knew how deeply into the moon dust Armstrong's foot was going to go. I don't know how many of you saw that foot going down. That was a great moment. That we had to find out a posteriori. But we knew how to get him back before we sank. This is a great mystery. Our whole cosmology, I've said one of the functions of myth is to deal with cosmology. There is no conflict between science and religion. There is a conflict between the science of the 20th century BC and the science of the 20th century AD. And if our religion remains tied to the 20th century BC, it's not working. And it's a function of poets and scientists and artists to capture the mystery of the universe that we now know, which makes that thing in the book of Genesis look like a toy shop. This is terrific. And it's ourselves. We know that space without going there. Out of the galaxy that I showed comes the solar system. Out of the solar system, or in it, is our Earth. And out of the Earth come we, the eyes, the ears, the minds of Earth. Earth has brought us forth, but the Earth itself was brought forth from space, and we come forth from the Earth, which was brought forth from space, and we have the space knowledge within us. It's a fantastic thing. There's a mythological world, and it goes past anything you can imagine. There's a beautiful book just come out about a couple of months ago by a young man named Capra, C-A-P-R-A, and it's called The Tao, T-A-O, of Physics, published by Shambhala in Berkeley. He gave me the book a couple of months ago, and I'm simply stunned what the physicists are finding, or finding that they don't know, matches so perfectly the words and findings of the mystics, particularly of the Orient of China and of India, that he can quote parallel passages from Niels Bohr, Heisinger, and Lanzer. There's a world to be opened to us today, a world of mystery out of this cosmos. That's one side of the subject. And the other now is the mystery of human beings today. What's happening? What's happening with women? What's happening with women is because of the masculine invention of the vacuum cleaner, they're released. from the beginning to the present, or to very nearly the present, women have been bound to a certain set of tasks. They give birth to children. And the husband can go away and renounce responsibility, but there she is, that's her child. And an Abyssinian woman said, whom I quote in my primitive mythology, nothing ever happens to men. From the time of puberty to the time they die, they got the same body. But something happens to us. And this is about the true thing about women. life happens to them. Suddenly their menstruation starts bang, now they're women. Then you're pregnant, darling, so okay, that's that one now. And then the child's born. She has to nurse the child. Well, the world has always been open to men to seek various careers, to do various things. And now it's open to women. And the seeking of careers and the doing of various things helps to develop the personality, the individuality, the antithetical mass. And one of the things that happens in marriage is that the man can't take it. He wants a wife who's going to do all those traditional things. And how is he going to respond to this phenomenon of another personality? With her demands and expectations, which he has to respect. I say you're playing a twosome here. It's not one thing with the woman helping him and the two of them bringing up a family. You've got not only a family, but you've got two personalities being developed. Two antithetical masses. And that's the big ball game in the household. I taught women for 38 years, and I would meet former students at the alumni reunions 10 years, 20 years later. Girls that I had known had become women. And I could remember the possibilities that sat there in front of me, because we used to have personal conference related with our students like that. And so what had happened to them? Well, there were those whose husbands had respected them as persons, not simply as helpmates. They had flowered. And there were those who had not flowered. I wasn't rude enough to ask why, but I knew why. Husband couldn't take it. She wanted a career. She wanted to advance. She wanted to do something. He couldn't stand it. Couldn't stand a rival career in the house. And this is the big game that's before us now. I'm saying this in relationship to the questions about matriarchy and patriarchy. Those are all behind us. This is a new job. It's a new thing. We're in a new world. Things are changing terribly fast. And all the old rules, they can help you a little bit. Somebody can teach you how to drive a car, but you've got to handle the new situation as it comes as you're driving. And so it is in life now. The old myths, they can't tell us a lot. There are main crises that we all go through. There's birth. There's a transit to maturity. There's self-effacement in the functioning of your role in the society. There is disengagement from the society. There's the assimilation of the mystery of death and acquiescence in it. All of these are constants that the mystic can tell us about. But there are all kinds of personal relationships and all kinds of cosmic histories that have to be experienced now, immediately, and going back is not the way to do it. With respect to Sumer, the man to read is Kramer, K-R-A-M-E-R, Samuel Noah Kramer. It all began in Sumer or something like that. Sumerian mythology, Sumer. Just look up his name in a file catalog and you'll see the best things on Sumer. For the women in the past, I think the imagery we have from Crete tells us the most. It was an open, lovely society. And where women play the role of a major role in the society, there's a grace, there's a accent, as I said, on experience, that is charming and important. Well, that quality can come back in our world, too. But there's no use for a woman to ask me, as some people do, what about women's myth? Well, you tell me, my dear. Well, in conclusion, I have this, and I thought it was great, and I was particularly pleased that I have to know the source. God wants you to disobey, quotation. Where does this come from, and how do you feel about it? comes from Romans 11:32. God has consigned all men to disobedience, that he may show his mercy to all. This is the key to Finnegan's Wake. Sin boldly, said Luther. Give God a chance. One of my most rewarding weekends. I've had many rewarding weekends, but none quite like this. I thank you all.